Danger. The emergency disrupt system is now activated.
Cake and grief counseling will be available at the conclusion of the test.
She's alive! Alive!
Maybe you should put some shorts on or something if you want to keep fighting evil today.
Why not just put a stake through her heart?
She's not a vampire.
Oh, you'd be surprised how many things that'll kill.
We are now seeing the beginnings of another stage of human evolution. At last, we can retire and give up this life of crime.
You and your training wheels.
Hailing frequencies are open.
Hello, sweetie.
Commencing countdown. T-5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanti Show, a Shoot the Whip subcast.
Didn't see that coming.
Of course.
I'm Mike.
I'm Sean.
I'm Rachel.
I'm David.
And I'm Paul.
And we're here to talk about Avengers 2, Age of Ultron, the much-anticipated monstrosity from Marvel. And I think we're just going to dive in this time, not waste any time. So who would like to describe this movie for the listeners? This will be the non-spoiler edition.
I think you should show us since you've seen it three times.
Since I've seen it three times. Okay. So the basic premise for those that are not comic junkies is this is set after the fall of S.H.I.E.L.D. As you well know, we immediately begin with the Avengers sort of out hunting down Hydra bases. And the premise is that Hydra has been messing with the scepter that we learned about in Avengers. And there's some weird science-y stuff going on. For those that are comic fans, that'll make more sense later. And we end up with the creation of a artificial intelligence and everything going to pot as a result. Also, we get introduced to some new, they're not called mutants anymore, they're enhanced, because I guess Marvel Studios is not allowed to say mutant at all, based on the X-Men franchise or whatever. And yeah, so the Avengers have to go save the world again. I think that's the non-spoilery version.
Sure. Sure.
So why don't we start with some general reactions? We'll kind of go through more general stuff, and then we'll hit up a spoiler wall, and then we'll go into more in-depth discussion, which I suspect people will be waiting on, given that this film has already garnered a great deal of controversy. So I will start with you, Mike, with your general reactions to the film.
Sure. So when I was paying attention to early reviews and early reactions, because I didn't get to see it until Sunday of this last week. So, you know, several days of everyone else seeing it, I adjusted my expectations down to this will be about as fun as Avengers. And for me, it was about as fun as Avengers. But then there were a couple of points even within that where I was so happy that I was doing like squee clapping in front of my face and just completely beside myself with glee. And that was tremendously fun, and that delivered everything that I wanted from the film. It felt the most comic booky of maybe any of the MCU films in a way that I really appreciated in terms of the set pieces. My main complaint is that I really feel like Black Widow was largely failed by the film, even though she also had very cool things, and I didn't really buy the Banner Widow dynamic. So that's me.
Fair enough. All right, Rachel, what about you?
I had a fairly similar reaction to Mike, as in, you know, it was pretty much what I wanted it to be. There were several parts where I was, like, squeeing at the screen, and there were also several parts where I was like, shit! Oh, shit! Which is, you know, always a good reaction to have. But unlike Mike, this movie actually turned Black Widow into my favorite Avenger. So I hope you're ready to put on your gloves, Mike. We're going to go rounds on this one.
Now, sure, that's interesting.
There are some alternate theories that I'm hoping we'll get to talk about. Maybe there are some difference in readings.
Yeah, so I will say, I mean, the Bruce and Natasha romance thing was kind of out of left field. I was like, what? The first time I saw it. And the second time I saw the movie, I was like, oh, okay, I can go with this. But largely, you know, this movie was at its best when it was having character moments, because of course that's what Joss Whedon's really good at anyway. And particularly, I think if you're interested in things from a screenwriting perspective, there are some amazing, economical, beautiful character moments in this that kind of show you how you can fit a lot of character information into a very brief few lines of dialogue in an action movie, which is really cool.
Indeed, Thor's hammer, for example.
I was just thinking Auntie Nat.
Okay, there's that too.
Yep.
But we probably shouldn't get into that. We'll get into a little bit more of that later. I suspect we're going to have a romping good time discussing Black Widow later.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right, David, what about you? General reactions?
I was certainly entertained. There were a lot of moments that I really, really liked. But they also felt kind of like a great deal of grace notes, but it also crystallized and magnified the problems that I had with the first film. And I felt overall that it was less than the sum of its parts, that all of these grace notes surrounded a very hollow core. And I was emotionally uninvolved in, for certainly these very, very, very extended fight scenes. I get a very mixed reaction to it.
Fair enough. All right, Paul?
I'm more in David's camp than Julia or Mike's camp. This felt to me like a bag of Doritos for the most part. While eating it, they tasted pretty good. I mean, the individual scenes were well enough. I mean, the whole Black Widow thing we'll get to talk about in a moment. But the actual, thinking about it afterwards, I'm not quite certain that it all came together or holds up as a unit afterwards. It was a good enough experience while I was doing it, but it's after the fact, like, it doesn't hold a candle in my mind to Avengers in looking backwards at it.
All right, fair. Okay, well, my reaction, I think it's a little bit of everybody. I had a lot of fun, which is about what I wanted. I agree with Mike. I go to a Marvel comic movie, I hope that it's going to be fun, and it's going to be sort of comic book fun. And that's something they've been delivering for a while, and that's exactly what I got. It's got fun fight scenes, it's got lots of humor. It felt like there was a lot more humor here than in any of the other films so far. And for the most part, it really worked for me. It made some of the more heady stuff more enjoyable. It kind of took some of the darkness out of it, unlike a certain other company's movies, which might have just never had a joke anywhere, and it would just got increasingly darker until the end when Captain America would have actually asked Ultron, "Do you bleed?" yeah.
Oh my god, dude, both times I saw that trailer, I was just sitting there going,
It's so, we're on a tangent and I don't care. That trailer for me is just, it's so dark. Like, it's just, I watch that and I just think, like, where's the hope?
Where's the joy?
I get it. There's some jealousy and like Superman is like, oh no, everybody thinks he's a god, but he's a false god and it's bad. But where's the joke? Like, even the first trailer, the Man of Steel trailer, it had that joke, right? Where he's about to say, you know, what does the S stand for? And he's like, it's not an S. And then he's about to say Superman, and we get that, right? The sound of the mic thing. And it's kind of this sort of bit of levity in what it was in essentially a kind of, not dark
incredibly
film, a little bit more joyful
movie.
Film by comparison. But in any case, whatever. I just ranted, and I'll just say that I overall enjoyed it. I had lots of issues, but a lot of them are nitpicky stuff, and some of them are we'll get into when we go past the spoiler wall. So I don't feel it's as strong as the first Avengers film, and I think that is largely because this film was the one that felt the most like it was in the middle of setting up other stuff than anything else we've seen, which was pretty much pointed out by the time we got to the after credits cutscene, which I'm just going to spoil because I honestly felt was the most worthless cutscene we've ever had, which is just...
And I was just like pooping myself when that cutscene happened because I was like, oh my god, the Infinity Gauntlet, you know.
But we've known it's coming for like five films.
Yes, but that scene is not for comics readers.
Yeah. How many people honestly at this point have not realized Thanos is going to be the next villain?
80% of film watchers do not probably know what the Infinity Gauntlet is.
You know, like I'd also be willing to bet even more, you know, like 80% probably did not realize that half this movie is a massive fucking setup for Captain America Civil War. They just think Tony's being his normal douchey self, which he kind of is.
Well, again, then what? Who is? What's the cutscene for? Who's it for?
Not us.
But it's not for general audiences, because all it is it's him going and grabbing this glove and going, fine, I'll do it myself. And then that's it.
It does.
There's nothing there.
I think it's somewhere in the middle. I haven't read the Infinity Gauntlet. I don't know what the story is. But I know that Thanos has been trying to get all these things because of Guardians of the Galaxy. So that scene would work for probably just about anybody seeing the Avengers who has also seen Guardians of the Galaxy, which explained who Thanos was. Because at the end of the first Avengers, I know a lot of us are going, who, what, with his appearance there. But here it's like, okay, the dude from that other movie, he's moving ahead with his plan. This is tying in from that.
But again, when at the end of the other Avengers, the reveal is actually revealing something. It's telling us, oh, by the way, the villain that we thought was the villain is not actually the villain. It's this creepy weirdo dude in his weird space like chair on a rock in an asteroid.
But right? That wasn't a reveal. It was just confusing. I think for a lot of people, it was like, who's that?
Right, yeah. But that's kind of the point. It's revealing something new. It's new information where we get to the end and we go, oh, what is, what? What,
no, but it's just, there's a difference going? Between new information and just frustratingly puzzling, which I is also the case for, say, Days of Future Past, where a lot of people, you know, a lot of us, if you're not versed in the comics, are just looking at a scene that doesn't mean anything.
And right, and I didn't like that cutscene either.
Yeah, but that was that's the thing with Thanos, Thanos' first appearance also. For non-comic book readers, that's not intriguing, that's baffling.
Yeah, because the Infinity Gauntlet that we introduce at the end of this film is the other gauntlet, because we've seen the right-hand Infinity Gauntlet in Asgard's treasure hoard.
Okay, and that I don't remember, and that's the other thing that, you know, I think a lot of the details between the movies are getting very, very hard to connect for everyone. But the broad lines, it's like, oh, dude from the bad guy from previous big Marvel film, we're good there.
I think it did everything that a 30-second teaser needed to.
You mean nothing?
Which is gesture toward the next film.
But we already know the next film's coming. Like, Marvel, every time they announce, it's like a big festival.
Well,
hey guys,
it's non-diegetic.
Guys, I have this amazing idea. There's an entire 2.5 other so we can stop bickering about this thing that Sean hates and the rest of us don't really care that much about.
And it lasted all of 5 seconds.
All I'm saying is if you don't want to stay for the credits, you can skip it and you won't miss anything of value.
Well, also, you don't have to stay to the very end of the credits because there isn't anything.
Correct.
That's fair. Okay, well, why don't we put up a spoiler wall and start getting into the specifics?
So, spoiler.
Yeah, after this point, spoilers. So if you don't want something ruined for you, stop listening at this moment. So, who would like to start with something specific?
Me!
Rachel, go.
The Vision! Oh my god! Vision! Oh, I was just like, I mean, I kind of knew he was coming because I was a little spoiled by hearing, you know, that Paul Bettany was actually having to go on set and be in costume and stuff, but he was like everything that I had hoped he would be, and just I loved that character so much.
Mike?
Yeah, I completely ditto Rachel with all of the hearty hearts. The Vision getting the soul, the mind gem was one of the things that made me go during the film, literally like that.
I lost my shit. I was like, yeah.
And something that I noted in people's reviews is that, and this loops very quickly back around to DC, the Vision is already more Superman than Superman was in Man of Steel.
Yes!
Yes!
Oh my god, like, okay, so the thing that he says at the end when Ultron's being like, you know, they're doomed, and he just said, but something isn't beautiful because it lasts forever, or whatever that exact quote was. And I was just like, oh my god, my heart. I am so in love with this character. And because he brings like this not quite innocence, but kindness with him that I just, oh god, oh, I love this character. It made me so happy.
Well, as he says, right, when they ask whether the Avengers ask him, like, whose side are you on? He's like, I don't think it's that simple. I'm on the side of life.
Yes!
Which is this kind of really vague notion, because it doesn't quite tell us what he's actually, like, his side, right? So it's really interesting, I think, that moment when it's sort of like, we're on the same side now because you're not wanting to blow up the whole frickin' planet. But Ultron, he's a turd.
On the other, but yeah. The hammer! Vision and the hammer!
No. Yes!
Yes!
That was the other moment when I, like,
and he does this so casually, toting it around, like, what the hell? I mean, it makes perfect sense, but it's just like, I could hear the people going, in the theater all around me as he's doing that, because we've already seen the scene where nobody except Cap can even move the hammer.
Right, that earlier scene is really important too, right? Because they're all kind of slightly intoxicated and they're like, it's a trick, you know? Hawkeye's like, it's a trick, it's like a magic trick, and you know, it's not really like coded to you and you gotta be worthy, blah, blah, blah. And so they all take turns trying to lift it, right? It's this kind of joking gesture. And then that kind of comes back around because we know all of the characters have had the moment where they're like, we don't understand how this hammer thing works, but the Vision just picks it up like it's a freaking toy.
Yeah, and just, so dum-de-dum-de-dum.
I found that the arrival of the Vision and up to including the hammer scene was perhaps the strongest moment in the film for me. And I knew that at some point the Vision was going to be arriving in the Marvel movies, but I didn't know for this film at all. So it was a total surprise for me when he showed up. And that was really nice. And that whole scene, I thought, worked really, really well. And then the payoff with the hammer was very nice, economical storytelling and a terrific payoff. So I thought that was great. Mm.
I wanted to pivot from that into Ultron, because for me, James Spader's Ultron is now at least my second favorite Marvel Cinematic Universe villain, probably behind Loki, because one, it seemed like James Spader was having all of the fun chewing the scenery. But two, I understood why Ultron was doing stuff. I had a really strong sense of his motivation, and he was engaging to me.
I was going to say, like, I loved watching James Spader chew the scenery because he was wonderful and menacing and creepy and weird, you know, everything that we could ever expect James Spader to be. But I had a harder time kind of understanding what his deal was. And the kind of the sort of hand-wavy, like, origin of him, where it's like, he's an AI from the scepter, but it's the stone, but I don't know what's going on. Like, that kind of bothered me after I sat there and thought about it for a minute. And I do kind of, like, I'm still waiting for an MCU movie to not run on daddy issues. And it does kind of bother me that we had Ultron, the sort of malevolent AI, and then they still kind of somehow reduce it back down to daddy issues where Tony is daddy this time. And I was like, really? Can we not have a movie where the villain's motivation is in some way daddy issues? Because let's be honest, that's what Loki's deal is.
Yeah.
And I love Loki, so.
I don't think Malekith or Ronan's set up are really daddy issues. Not that they're strong villains, but I don't see them as daddy-oriented.
Ronan, maybe, he's got, like, some kind of deal, but you're right, Malekith is not. Malekith is just, like, you know, fucking Malekith. So, okay, fair enough.
I guess I just had some issues with the character. I mean, there is a little bit of that hand-wavy, like, let's show you what AI looks like, and, like, and then, like, putting it in the sky, and it's just, that felt a little hand-wavy, and I'm like, why would you have a visual representation of two AIs attacking each other? I mean, I understand why from a visual perspective, because it makes that interesting, but it just seemed kind of cheesy a little bit and not necessarily in the good way. And I think the only bigger issue I had with the Ultron character is that he felt too much not like an artificial intelligence to me. He felt basically like a sadistic human stuck in a robot body, which isn't his, like, he's supposed to be not human-ish to some degree, or at least I feel like he should be. And that was an issue I had because it just seemed like he was so personable, in a way that it just didn't feel right for me.
My reaction to him were kind of split. On the one hand, he was one of my favorite aspects of the film. And in fact, that his smart aleck manner, really worked for me, especially as they're supposed to, in some ways he's set up as a reflection of Tony Stark, and so he's the same kind of, they've got the same sense of humor, the same vibe, they're even making the same jokes, right? And I thought Spader was terrific there, but I agree with Rachel in that I found his motivations very murky, and exactly what he was, you know, getting up to from most of the film, or what his deal was, I didn't really know. In fact, I had sort of motivational problems for a lot of the film, but that was one of them. And I wish the film had done more to show us him as a menace until he starts levitating cities, rather than simply telling us. Because we don't really get a sense. In the trailer, I had this, and after it's called Age of Ultron, I had this sense of this kind of world-threatening menace that he was. And here in the film, essentially, is limited to, threatening one of Marvel's mythical Eastern European, pocket countries. And his infinite army of robots also never really felt, they were just stuff to get smashed. They never felt like a threat because we never saw them except when they were being taken apart by the Avengers. So I thought the personality and Spader's performance were terrific, and some of the other stuff establishing him as a menace rather than somebody who was fun, didn't work as well.
All right, fair enough. And now, Paul.
Sorry. I'm much more in David's camp again. Sorry, David. I'm riding on your coattails here. Ultron as a personality and a character, I liked a lot. James Sayer chose the scenery very well. There's that scene in the church, for example, with the twins, which I really, really liked. I understand is kind of a riff off James Spader's current series. I forgot the name of it. It's like Blackthorn, something like that.
Blacklist.
Thank you. So he's channeling that sort of thing and throwing that in there as almost as a gift for fans of that. I mean, he does do the scenery thing. His interactions with Ulysses Claw, for example, I thought that was great. But yeah, his plan is pants, and not only that. Okay. So we're going to take a piece of an Eastern European country that doesn't exist, levitate it up in the air, and then drop it. This is your big plan. And not only is it a very limited plan, I mean, he's supposedly in the internet everywhere that, okay, Jarvis is fighting him. But that, his plan boils down to him playing around with this country, levitating a city. And not to mention, for the most part, his plan is iced half an hour before the movie ends. And it's just going through the motions of keeping him from stopping the icing. It's so it's kind of fizzles for me.
I think the film tries to set it up. There are a couple instances when Ultron talks about extinction events, and he mentions the dinosaurs, and there's another moment when he talks about there's something pure about meteors. And so he's interested in extinction events, and he's interested in particular in meteor type events. But I think is something that David had mentioned, which is that it's unclear to me, at least, why he comes to that conclusion, that that's the thing he latches onto. It's just sort of said and declared as though that's his interest, and so we just have to accept that he's going to throw a giant city into the earth and kill everybody. Rachel.
No, I was just going to point out that I actually did think that his entire purpose behind levitating the city was clear, even if the physics completely do not work for what he was trying to do, because it's a nice big chunk of rock, but there's no way he'd be able to actually accelerate it fast enough. So, yeah, sorry.
Just stop with your physics. What?
I've heard a retcon, or at least an interpretation of that over on Making Light, where because he's got vibranium in the base of it, that if it does land, that will cause extra shockwaves and stuff. But yeah, if it's not coming in at meteor speed, yeah, it's not gonna. It could do a fair amount of chunk to Europe maybe, but it's not gonna cause an extinction effect. And I would have liked that title better. Avengers: Age of Extinction is better than Avengers: Age of Ultron for what he's trying to do.
Yeah. But Mike, what about you?
See, this may be just
a side note of having been somewhat familiar with the character and reading a fair number of the comics, you know, Ultron is designed to be in a suit of armor around the world. That's what Tony says. Ultron internalizes that agenda, but comes to sentience and then downloads the entirety of the internet, which is full of hate and human disgustingness, and decides, how do I protect this thing? It is disgusting and not worth being protected. It can't be a problem if everyone is dead. And I buy that as AI motivation. And then it's just supposed to be a mass driver. So the physics don't work, but I understand what it's trying to gesture toward.
Yeah. No, the mass driver concept definitely makes sense. But I was a little murkier on why he hated everyone. So thank you for explaining it.
That's how I took it. You know, it's he was born and raised in 4chan.
Oh, God.
A more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Okay, well, we should probably move to something else to maybe discuss. Shall we bring up what has been looming over this whole discussion? Black Widow?
Sure.
Okay. Well, can I just go first?
Proceed.
Okay. So I got a whole bunch of little things I did want to talk about with the Black Widow character. So me personally, I don't have as much issue with the narrative that they present her with, which is the idea that, when she was in the Red Room, as her final initiation, her graduation, as it were, she's sterilized, under the belief that if she's interested in having a family, it'll affect her ability to be a super ninja assassin. I don't know if that logic really holds, but whatever, it doesn't matter. I don't necessarily have an issue with that narrative. I understand why people do have an issue with that. But I think my issue with the introduction of that narrative is a problem with the film as a whole, because of the way that particular moment is framed. And so there are a whole lot of things to talk about when it comes to that. So the first is that this film focuses a lot on backstories for characters who really aren't the main Avenger characters and have not had any of their own isolated films, which I think becomes very clear here is a huge problem for the Marvel Universe, the cinematic universe, because here we have this backstory that it keeps coming up for, we learn about it in the first Avengers at least by a couple of lines, Black Widow, now we get that's the actual backstory for her, and then we get all of this stuff going on with Hawkeye, and I think what it taught me in that moment was how desperately we really needed to have a film with them in it, whether it's a Black Widow film and a Hawkeye film, or a Hawkeye and Black Widow film, or a Secret Avengers film, something where they have their stories being told, because it seemed not a good place to put it in this film. This film is essentially, the core of this is actually Iron Man, Captain America, and Thor, and that's based on the fact that we have had almost full trilogies from everyone preceding that. That are those three characters. So that's the first, is that it seemed to me that this is ill-placed. The scene where it's revealed seemed to ring false to me, because up to this point, the relationship she has with Bruce Banner, at no point to me did it ever make sense that her interest, even romantic, would have also come with the caveat that we're going to have babies and have like the nuclear family and get a farm in the middle of nowhere. So why we're talking about that in that moment, it didn't make sense to me that these two characters would even have a conversation about that. Particularly since preceding that, they talk about running away. And given that in the Cap 2 movie, that we learn that her entire backstory has been revealed to the world, right? Running away literally means running away, right? They're not gonna go, like, buy a farm and have, babies and all that kind of stuff. So it didn't make sense to me. Why are we even talking about this? This isn't the issue about why the Hulk doesn't, or why Banner doesn't want to be with her. So when she reveals that as though this whole monstrous thing, like, I'm monstrous because I'm sterilized, the real monstrosity is the fact that she is a murderer, right? That she has, as is in the first Avengers, right? Is that she has a ledger full of red, and she's been wanting to wipe it clean, which is why she's been working with S.H.I.E.L.D., right? But in this moment, she's conflating the fact that she's done all these horrible acts in the past with the fact that she cannot have children like the Hulk, and so therefore she's monstrous, and that didn't make sense to me.
Okay, so this is the problem that I have with the way people are reading the scene when they're like, oh, she's saying that she's a monster because she's been sterilized. That's like this extremely narrow reading that completely ignores the entire context of the scene and of the backstory that we have been, that Natasha's revealed to us so far. You know, what she's telling Bruce is, like, this is the shit that went on in the Red Room. The reason they sterilized us was so that basically we couldn't have, you know, a family or anything that would be more important than killing. And I will also point out that in that scene, the person who brought up, oh, I can't have kids, so I can't be normal, is Bruce. And then she is responding to him in kind because he's the one who fucking brought it up. So reading this as her being like, a woman who can't have children is a monster, is grossly looking at it so narrowly. And like, I understand that my interpretation is not the only one out there and that people will feel how they're going to feel about this, but I do find it very upsetting because this movie had so much good stuff for Natasha in it, where she got to, you know, have her moments of vulnerability and she got to have her moments of strength and she got to be a very well-rounded character relative to what you get in movies like this. And if any of the shit that she'd gone through had happened to a male character, people wouldn't be bitching about it. So that really bothers me. And then when we get into her saying, you know, I will say that I do not think that the line was very well written, and I don't think the scene was terribly well written, and actually apparently in earlier versions of the script, instead of monster, she said loner. But the whole point is that Bruce is going, well, I can't have a normal life because I can't have this thing here where it's a house and a family, because they're in Hawkeye's house and they're looking at his family. And she's going, well, I can't either. And he's all shook up because he lost his, you know, he lost his shit and hulked out and killed a bunch of people. And she's sitting there going, I'm in the same situation with you where it is completely impossible for me to have what you're terming as a normal life. Plus, I go around and kill people when I'm not completely out of control of myself. So who is the monster in this situation? And I think we can still be, you know, have some kind of relationship and have some kind of thing. Now, whether or not you believe in the Bruce and Natasha relationship, that's a whole other thing. But that was really how I read that scene, for all that it was very clumsily scripted. And there was something else that I was going to say, and I can't remember what it was, so go next person.
So I, when I came out of the film, I was seeing it with some friends, and one of those friends related a reading that I think is, could be super cool, but is almost certainly not what was meant. And that is the reading that the entire Bruce and Natasha relationship is her just exerting control to keep him on the team. And that the romantic gestures and the reason that they're so overt and so forward, instead of being because Banner is incredibly shy and down on himself, it's so that she can reify the kind of lullaby controls. And because that all culminates in the I adore you smooch, but I need the other guy, and that it's all a system of control. I don't know if that's really what's meant to be going on, but it is an interesting, different approach.
If that's their intent, then they failed miserably to set that up, because there are numerous reaction shots, like not only with Black Widow, but also with other characters commenting on their romance, as it were, where that is just totally shot up. I mean, like, with the moment, right, when she's talking to the Hulk and he's flying away in the stealth craft, right, and she says, hey, buddy, you gotta have to turn around, and he cuts the conversation short. The reaction she has is not, ah, fuck, I fucked up my mission, damn. It's, like, it's heartbreak. She's actually hurting. I feel like, I don't know how that can hold up. I feel like the film, if that was their intent, the film failed miserably.
It may also have been within that reading that she went in with that mission and then got emotionally involved. So there could be somewhere in the middle.
I think that's probably more likely what initially occurred. Anyway, Rachel.
Oh, the thing that I was going to say, just kind of like with the whole Natasha family thing, is I mentioned, you know, character moments like when Clint's little daughter calls her Auntie Nat. And that tells you so much about the character right there, just in one line, where it's like, you know, she's already said she's best friends with Hawkeye. It means that she's been around enough that his kids consider her part of the family and that she acts as part of the family. And then if you take that in the context of her saying, this is something that I can never have myself, the fact that she has still built a family for herself, despite the fact that the Red Room did everything they could to make her incapable of forming normal human relationships, means that she's a really fucking awesome character. So I just wanted to comment on that.
Well, I guess one thing I would add that in that scene, I think the line that gave me the most difficulty was she actually explicitly states that being the principle behind being sterilized is to make it easier to kill, not just to not have any attachments, but she explicitly states that the intent was because you cannot bear a child, it is going to make it easier for you to kill. And the implications of that line were, I thought, rather horribly essentialist. And I agree, Rachel, with a lot of the reading that I think that was how it felt like the scene wanted me to go. But then that line came in and gave me a real problem.
Well, I would not be surprised if, you know, the crazy assholes that were in charge of the Red Room would believe something like that.
Yeah, she doesn't question that, like, and nor does Bruce, right? The line comes in and it isn't interrogated. I was sort of, if there had been something in the film, particularly at that moment, that challenged that, I think it would have sat more easily with me.
Mike, last thoughts on this particular issue?
Something that my fiance reacted really intensely to that I wanted to mention is that a lot of Natasha's moments with regards to the other Avengers always already put her on the outside in a way that I don't know if it was really to the benefit of the character or the overall story. When she comes along and she scoops up the shield, the line isn't, you know, it's not something that creates camaraderie. It's something that distances her and makes her more like a maternal figure to the team. It's, I'm always having to pick up after you boys. And I didn't feel like there was, that it was delivered in a way that was meant to be pointed. It was just kind of, you know, it somewhat reduced her to the way that female supers had been in supers team comics, like where Wonder Woman is the secretary. And it's just, it kind of put her back into that role for me that I didn't really like. And then she's on the outside of the conversation about the hammer. So she, like, her dynamic within the team, I think in a couple of ways puts her outside of it, when it could invite her in.
Interesting. Okay. I guess the only last thing I would say is I just want a Black Widow movie, damn it.
Yeah.
I just, this story, I guess part of the issue I had is that this story, like, we bring this very, very serious issue up in, like, a 2-minute scene, and then, like, that's it. And I'm like, no, like, that is such a heady subject. Why don't we have a fucking Black Widow movie? And why do we have to wait until, was it, like, 2019, or by the time I'm dead before we get a female Marvel movie at all?
Because Kevin Feige is full of crap. And,
Well, and we did hear there was the email that came out of Marvel about why they won't do a female movie. The CEO, I guess, of Marvel said that we won't do a female superhero movie. And I will agree with Mike that I'm going to see Ant-Man, but I would be much more excited about a Black Widow movie, even like a Black Widow and Hawkeye movie. I would see that if it was them like doing spy shit and beating people up. That'd be great.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're the two Avengers we know and have seen the least because they haven't had movies of their own. Like, for example, why does Hawkeye use arrows? Why arrows? What is that deal? I mean, yes, he's very good at them, but how did that come to be? Why? I mean, yes, I've read the comics, but in the movie cinematic universe, audiences have no clue why he does arrows. You just see him using arrows. Like, why? There's an unanswered question there.
Although he does have that great line when he's trying to give a kind of not quite a pep talk to the Scarlet Witch, but he's like, the city's flying and we're fighting an army of robots and I've got arrows. None of this makes any sense.
But I'm going to do my job. Yeah, I love that so much.
Yeah, I did, and that was something I did like, is that they gave Hawkeye a bit more comedic moments to kind of play, to chew on. There's a lot more comedy overall, lots of little quips and jabs. It felt to me, the one thing I loved about this is that it felt like they were a team. They were more cohesive as a team, at least from the start.
The
right?
choreography of that opening fight scene was very good, and very team-like.
Yeah, and you see that throughout, right? That the way they seem to work together, I mean, we have these moments where, like, Thor and Captain America are, you know, basically using each other's abilities together to fight things, and then you have other characters mixing and matching. I loved that because it brought that point when we started to see them unravel a bit. It made that seem like it made more sense. And I think, yeah, you're right that the choreography did that really well. Someone else want to bring some last things up really quick, and then we'll probably have to close out.
Well, I guess I wanted to talk about what I meant about the hollow core, and that the which has been an issue for me with a lot of the Marvel films is what feels like a very sort of closed in, almost refusal of meaning. And I think that one of the reasons why there's been so much discussion about the Black Widow scene is that that's one of the moments in the film where it's actually about something. But the comedy, a lot of it was very funny, but there was also, on the one hand, a sameness in that the characters, there was like the Quentin Tarantino syndrome of all of the characters are starting to sound like Whedon, and even Thor. And it's like, well, that it's funny some of his lines, but he doesn't sound like Thor there. I'm hearing the clever script writer at that moment, but. Over and above that, there's this tone deafness, where, for instance, when Tony Stark uses peace in our time, and I get it that we're supposed to see that ironically, but he uses it unironically. So how can we expect to believe that anyone would be able to use that line seriously? And not be aware of its terrible irony. And there was another moment that I think that really crystallized this for me, and that Margot really recoiled at when it happened. And that's when in the Hulkbuster fight, when Iron Man takes the Hulk through that empty building and it collapses. And the images are very 9/11. And it's like, well, okay, so why have you done this? If it's not supposed to invoke that, how could you not see that it would? And if it was supposed to invoke that, why the hell? It makes no sense. It's just baffling. And so this expanded throughout much of the film to me, so that again, when we finally got to that very long, long climax, it wasn't attached to anything. It became quite boring for me as I was just waiting it out, because though I loved the 2-page spread slow motion fight scene in the cathedral, the rest of it was just, gesture without motion.
All right, fair. Paul, you want to, jump in and offer anything?
Yeah, we didn't even talk about, Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch. I had thought going into this, okay. Because based on the Avengers and this is a Whedon film, okay, somebody's going to die. I was pretty convinced it was going to be one of the twins because they weren't going to kill off Hawkeye or Black Widow in this movie. Although they seem to head fake it, like, oh, we've seen Hawkeye's family. Now he's going to die. and Black Widow winds up being captured by Ultron. Oh, she's going to die. And I thought, no, it's going to be one of the twins. Wasn't the twin I expected, but that's fine because, well, actually, in retrospect, given that he is in the other non-Marvel universe, it kind of makes sense to do off Quicksilver. But I think the movie misses a beat because the twins obviously hate Tony for a very good reason. But why they switch sides to help him? Yeah, they're trying to stop Ultron from destroying the Earth, but. They seem to jump onto the Avengers team, especially, I mean, i.e. Tony's team, way too quickly given how much of that formative element that is in their makeup. And she stays. I mean, I can see Tony leaving, but she stays on the team after this? Really? And not to mention, she's lost her brother. She's going to stay on the team even after Hawkeye's speech. I wasn't quite certain, but we're going to get at least one more movie with her, I think. So we'll see.
Yeah, she's going to be in Civil War. Yeah, for sure. So, Mike, you had a hand first. So, anything you want to add to any of this?
Yeah, to go back to David's comment, I was also struck by the oddity of that, of collapsing that building, just because knowing 9/11 survivors, I know that the dust from the collapse causes quite a lot of damage just on its own. But I do appreciate how much otherwise the Avengers spent a lot of time saving people, like a lot of saving people. Like, we have to get everybody out of the city, and we'll have a montage of getting people out of the city. And they're constantly trying to save people throughout much of the film, and I so appreciate that.
It's very anti-Man of Steel that way.
Oops, sorry, I had my mic muted. Basically, I just wanted to say what Mike was saying, like, the whole thing with the watching for civilian casualties. And I also, I'm glad it was Scarlet Witch who lived till the end, because what I was super excited about was kind of that end promise of maybe a new Avengers lineup, which I'm guessing is what they're going to use for Civil War, but where, you know, it's, you know, Steve's still in the lead because Steve, but Natasha and Scarlet Witch and Rhodey and Falcon and Vision. And I was like, oh my God, for just one moment, I can believe in this team that has two women and two men of color on it and a weird android thing that isn't human.
Maybe the next film will pass the Bechdel test.
That was, well, I mean, technically speaking, I think this one actually did pass the Bechdel test. Yes, because of the very brief scene when Natasha's having the flashbacks to her past and she's talking to her instructor in the red room.
Okay.
And you're watching the girls practice ballet and she goes, "You'll break them." And the instructor says, "Only the ones who can be broken, but you are strong, you are marble." And I was like, well, that technically they're all not right. Talking about a dude, so there you go.
All right, well, great. So there's lots more to talk about. So folks listening want to leave their comments or whatever, go to skiffyandfanny.com or send us an email at skiffyandfanny@gmail.com. But now is the time when we got to close out and we got to grade this film. So I'm going to start with you, Mike. What is your grade for this film?
So I had incredibly fun moments and enjoyed a big swath of it. But I do think that there are structural problems with weight of continuity and my thoughts about Black Widow Hulk. So I'm going to give this a B.
Fair enough. Rachel?
It's kind of hilarious because, like, I loved it and I was filled with squee and I really loved Black Widow and I don't give that much of a crap about the Hulk. But I, too, am going to give it a B because I felt like it was a solid, awesome B. Like, it was fun. I'm going to buy it and I'm going to watch it a bunch more times and I actually think I might like it better than the first Avengers just because everyone got to have more personality, and Hawkeye wasn't Loki's hand puppet the whole time.
That's fair. All right, David?
Certainly there's lots of stuff that kept me entertained, but also lots of longueur and just the stuff that grew and bothered me, so I'm going to give it a C.
So much French from David. All right, see it is. Paul?
This movie has lots of good moments, but it's also got lots of problems, and it's nowhere near the first movie. I'm wavering. Okay, I'll be generous to it. I'm being generous, mind you. I'm going to give it a B-.
All right, fair enough. For me, I will... Gosh, you know what? I was going to give this a B+, because I really had a lot of fun. And then you all gave it slightly lower grades, and so now I feel really weird. But I'm just going to give it a B+ anyway, because I still had a lot of fun, even though I had issues with the film. That grade could change in the future, but those issues have already been well established by everyone else. So, all right, guys. Well, we did it. We covered Age of Ultron.
Woo!
Yay.
Also, could we just say, like, would it be fair to say that this movie should not have been called Age of Ultron? Because I don't think one film counts as an age.
No, nor does one city.
It should have just been called, like, you know, Week of Ultron or something.
Weekend with Ultron.
Yeah. Weekend of Ultron.
My dinner with Ultron.
All right, perfect.
Our average comes to a B minus.
Oh, cool. Well, great. Well, cool. Well, on that note, guys, if you want to leave your comments, just go to stephenfanta.com or email us. All the details will be at the end of the show. And thanks to all of you lovely folks, my fellow crew people.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Sean.
All right. Awkward ending. End scene. If you would like to send us hate mail on this episode or any other topics we've covered, you can do so in a number of ways. You can send us an email.
SkiffyandFanty@gmail.com.
You can send us a tweet.
@SkiffyandFanty.
Leave a comment on the blog.
SkiffyandFanty.com.
Go to Google+.
Shawnee Jen.
And or Facebook.
The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Our intro music comes from Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
You're just another weak human afraid to face death.
I fart in your general direction!
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
This is Ripley, last survivor of the Nostromo, signing off.